products available.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're having one of our funny network issues with Chris as we continue our discussion with Ray Stanford. Chris is kind of sounding a little hollow there, and hopefully in a few minutes things will kind of clear up and improve.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, you sound like the Verizon man.
Can you hear me now?
Good.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. These things do tend to happen occasionally, Ray. You'll have to forgive us. Modern technology sometimes is not all it's cracked up to be.
We need to crack the ET mystery open and get them to help us.
There we go.
Okay, now, as we broke, Ray Stanford was busy looking at the questions you listeners have posted at forum.theparacast.com. We have a special board called the Question Bank, and we always open up a topic or thread for guests when we have enough fair warning. This time we did. And, Ray, before we broke for our previous break, you were in the middle of answering some of the listener questions. You want to move on?
Yes. Well, one of the listeners, hopefully, had posted, he said, am I not just cherry-picking the desks that look most like UFOs? And he entered posted a photograph of two cultural source UFO-like things, or disc-shaped anyway, not UFO-like necessarily. But actually, the two that he posted were from the Fort Action culture, which is the older one, up to 1,750 years old, and the Mississippian culture, which is only 1,000 and less years old. And it's not a question of cherry-picking. I was asked by Chris that he said he would love for me to do a thing on these discs, and what I then did, I picked out the ones that look most like UFOs and the ones just following the salt rivers and posted them, realizing that that if I posted my whole collection of 30-some-odd discs, we would probably take up a lot of space that you wouldn't want taken up.
Now, also, if you're looking for anomalies, they have to be the exceptions. So
right,
it's
yeah,
not
you,
like I'm right. Cherry-picking anomalies. Well, in the case of a UFO sighting, there may be, as MUFON said, 6,000 UFO cases in all of 2011 that came to them. But of those cases, maybe 80 or 90% are conventional objects or phenomena. The mystery exists with the exceptions. So in this case, Ray, the mystery exists with the exceptions that you found.
Yes, and there. I should mention, however, Gene, that there is a continuum. That is to say, as you lay these out in front of you, and you see these rare, the UFO, then you see, for example, now right now I'm just clicking on it so that I'm telling the truth. I'm looking now in my picture file, and I'm looking at one that we didn't get to post on there. But this one has, they've eliminated the domes and put a little cup in the middle, a small cup in the middle for the index finger and the thumb, so they can roll it underhand easily. And it's retained the eight spots that I call likely representations of emitters, devices that electrify the air for magnetic propulsion. But on the other side, they have none of these. It's a beautifully patinated disc that I just missed recently getting into my own collection, and someone else has now. But it is an nice example of what in evolutionary terms we'd call a missing link. We do, in fact, have the links all along now and can show the gradual transition from the rarest to the most common. And the more they become modified from the original disc, the more you're likely to find the types. And that curve of design change coincides with the curve of popularity of the game across from at least the Mississippians' first period, all the way up to the coming of the white man. So it's not surprising, and it is totally reasonable to presume that the rarest are the ones that were earliest, and they were modified because the game, obviously, even as our own game rules have been modified, was modified across time, too.
Just look at the game football, American football. It was evolved out of the round soccer ball, then it kind of morphed into an elongated rugby ball. And then the early 20s and 30s, when American football was devised, the ball was seemed to be wider and not as long. Now it's more streamlined because the game has evolved into more of a passing game. So in that short period, we see an evolution of a game and a game piece, if you will, So it stands to reason that you would see that in a game like Chunky. So you want to continue on there, Ray, and address
some of
the other questions?
Let me get back to where that was. Hold on. Let me see if I can. Here we go. There was. All right. Now, let me. I'm just looking. Hold on. Now, I wanted to comment on something that that Angelo said, and he said when someone was posting pictures of, say, Renaissance paintings that have things in the sky that look like our concept of UFOs. He said, but these were representations of God. This may well be, but the question we have to ask ourselves is, where did the artist get the concept of what God in the sky communicating something down to people below looked like? Is it possible that, in fact, people were seeing things, believed that they were a manifestation of God or the gods in some cases, and were communicating with beings or whatever downward? We simply don't not know. We cannot just put a question mark there and say, because there's a question mark, it can only be taken to represent God, because the artists are very talented and they're very specific. And I swear that some of those in the paintings look, in fact, they're just as good as we might expect from the best UFO photograph today.
One that was posted has coherent light coming down in a thin beam, which it seems a little bit odd, because at the time they didn't have a way to, you know, to beam coherent light as in a laser, which doesn't spread out over distance. So, I mean, that fact alone, I think, is very, very suggestive.
Yeah, the collimated beam, yeah, is a very interesting concept. If it was just concept or if it was actually having seen, certainly you can imagine that anyone seeing a collimated beam would be quite impressed. I would mention that now a laser beam of low intensity, of course, is not very visible unless you have moisture in the air to scatter it, because it is coherent. It's all traveling along the beam. But as you get to the higher energy beams that you get some energy pumping into the atmosphere, you can actually see a glowing column. And we don't know for sure yet, although we filmed quite a few examples of it, exactly how these beams are created. But we're beginning to get some good ideas from, you know, from the hard data work that I'm doing. Are we too early, Chris, to translate into some of the questions people ask, in fact, about our laser, the project we were using, and bouncing it off a UFO because the subject had been, in fact, brought up by Voyager?
No, I think it's a good place to go. Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, maybe backdrop here. We really need to look at the background here. Explain to our listeners who do not visit the forums, and you should, forum.theparacast.com, what we are talking about here.
Okay. Now, if they were to go back in the forum to several years ago, a couple of years ago or so, when I was last on, I had provided, and it is still available, Chris tells me, a what I call a slide, a photo montage of the actual laser strike, where you can see, I have a picture at the lower left of the unit we were using to generate the laser, and you can see where it was when at one point, and then you can see where it was swept up and stopped at another point, and in the sweep, it catches the UFO in the beam. I should point out that we never did fire that laser at anything that we thought might be a conventional aircraft. In fact, before I ever tried to hit this object with a laser, I called the Bergstrom Air Force Base, just outside of Austin at that time, and I talked to their command post, who knew me, and they confirmed that they had the object on radar, but had no idea what it was. They said, it's unidentified. As far as we're concerned, we don't have any idea what that is out there. It was at that time, it hovered or slowly approached us during part of that time for about 10 minutes, and then it changed its direction. During that 10 minutes, I had called them and gotten that information. So after it began to move off, I went to what we call the UFO vector unit and succeeded in striking the object with the laser as it was moving at rather high speed from west to east. Now, someone asked, well, in those days, you know, lasers were pretty hard to get a hold of. What in the world were you using? Well, what we were using was custom made for us by a major laser corporation, at least at that time, its name was Liconix.
I'll tell you what, before we get to Liconix and what it means and why it's there, Ray Stanford joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms. I get it. You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30% while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should too. Find out what they know. Call us and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy-free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
With Gene and Chris, you're on the Paracast. We're talking to Ray Stanford, longtime veteran UFO researcher and scientist. We are exploring a lot of issues about ancient history, UFO research, etc. Most important, we're answering your questions. Many of you have posted questions at forum.theparacast.com, forum.theparacast.com. A lot of rich material there that we're exploring one by one. And we mentioned, of course, Angelo's questions. Remember, Angelo is one of our moderators. He's a bit of a skeptic. Let's point that out. But he's very interested in what's going on. Ray, you want to pick up where you left off, or should we move on to another question?
Let me mention, this laser was no ordinary laser at all, in fact. Back in those days, we were one of the very few in the world that had a video-modulated laser. Now, the laser was used in parallel with a television camera and a 2,110-millimeter focal-length catadioptric telescope with a photomultiplier on the back of it. That was so that it was designed primarily to test whether the laser beam would be bent by some field effect of the object, because there had been some preliminary evidence suggesting this. But it also, in case, which we would believe if they've been here as long as they seem to have been, if they could decode our television signals and see them, it also carried a television program that was designed to communicate with them should they be able to pick it up. This video modulated laser, as I said, it wasn't anything you pick up off the shelf. Back then, in 1973, it cost our corporation $11,000. I checked just before we went on the air, and the change in monetary value then, if our economic system existed back then, what we would have paid for it was $49,000. It was a very expensive unit, but very important to our purposes. We also tested it by communicating to a helicopter that had a receiving unit in it. So we know it was capable of getting a message across great distances, but the object that we struck, and the photograph proves it, did not stop and answer our inquiries. And in case they did, however, we were wearing white jumpsuits and green goggles that would block the intense long wavelength red of the helium neon laser, just in case their answer were a little more powerful than ours.
Well, Ray, we're talking about Project Starlight, which was your effort back in the early 70s to gain hard data, scientific data from UFO events. Why don't you describe what Project Starlight was for our listeners who are not familiar with it? And go ahead.
Oh, let me first stress that the official name back then was Project Starlight International, and it should not, either as intent, purpose, or philosophical outlook on life or reality, be mistaken for the so-called Johnny-come-lately, in my opinion, copycat name, Project Starlight of a certain well-known person who, for certain fees, will take
you can say the name, Stephen Greer.
Stephen Greer. And
he doesn't like us anyway. There's no hope for Stephen Greer. Excuse me, Ray. You know. Stephen Greer is not a problem here because he hates us anyway.
Okay. Well, I guarantee you there's no affinity here with what he's doing, or the fact that he grabbed our name. He thought we were out of the way. Actually, we went underground. We were getting such good stuff and resurfaced. The name we use now, so we're not mistaken for him, is Organization for Physical UFO Science. You can think of it by remembering the word, the Latin word for work, opus, and it abbreviates Organization for Physical UFO Science. And what we were doing, Chris, back then, I had, back in my very early days of actual in the field UFO research, I had naively gotten taken in by the contactee claims of George Adamski, which later, when he revealed to me how he faked his photographs and that he never had any physical contact with alien beings, I changed my mind. I decided, hey, Ray, you got to get into something that means something to science. In my high school days, I had planned on becoming a rocket engineer, and had launched some of the largest rockets ever launched by amateurs in that time period, which I have pictures and show in my presentation on UFOs to get my background. But I, after some close encounters with UFOs, and after Adamski telling us this, I decided to steer clear of all these claims about space brothers and telepathic messages, and try to get something that will communicate to the real world of science, rather than just with those who have a desire to believe something about alien visitors. And as a result, in 1964, after investigating the Socorro case and being very impressed, I began to try to build up a way of photographing and tracking UFOs with optical and electronic instruments. My approach initially in Arizona beginning in 1964 through 1967, November, was quite naive. I was unfortunately influenced by the advocacy of Don Kehoe, the well-known UFO writer, in his proposal that that someone set up a mock UFO lighting on the ground that looked like a UFO in order to convince UFOs that maybe one of their craft was disabled and maybe they'd come down and you could get good images or film or something. Well, that puts in my opinion, whatever intelligence is behind these things seems to be very intelligent, and it puts it down to a naively, ridiculously dumb level that they would think an artifact on the ground of lights was something of theirs. I think they probably know where their craft, wherever they come from, are located when they're in the vicinity of the Earth. Well, we did this, though, and we did this for 64, from the beginning of the summer of 64 through November of 67.
It's kind of like duck hunting, right, Ray, where you get your duck decoys out and then hope the geese or ducks will land?
Right. Yeah, that's right. And but we decided to instead, after I got to Texas, I decided to, well, I still held on to the idea partly. What we did outside of Austin in 73 when I began to get funding, we built a huge, we'd done this earlier at Pipe Creek, Texas, and we did have a UFO show up. And it apparently flashed, interestingly, I won't get into the details to take time on that, but it flashed what apparently was what mathematically you would call inverse pi. We were flashing a mathematical code of pi, and it apparently flashed inverse pi for whatever that might or might not mean. Anyway, we didn't get any pictures that night, but once we moved to Austin and we had headquarters in town, but that should not be mistaken for our headquarters, eventually the two lab buildings that was way out northwest of town, out beyond the end of Highway 2222 and Valenti Road, in the hill country, where we had a 400-acre site, and at the heyday of it, we had the two lab buildings. One was for electronic equipment, the other was for optical equipment, and we had radar. With, it was either, I forget, a 30 or a 60-mile radius radar that was licensed with the people you license these things with. And we had, of course, the laser system I mentioned. We had to prove to the state of Texas satisfaction that we could that we would not mistake a conventional aircraft for a UFO as being a UFO, and therefore possibly knock pilots, hurt their vision by the laser.
I'll tell you what, we'll get into more lasers and his studies and all the work that Ray Stanford has done. You're with Gene and Chris. You're in
Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Listeners, it's Jason Lewis, and now that the holidays have come and gone, it's time to get serious about our New Year's resolutions. For 2012, resolve to protect your most valuable asset, your family. Daily, we hear about all the crazy stuff happening around the world, unemployment, food shortages, natural disasters, just to name a few. For my preparation, I recommend WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com offers delicious ready-made meals like cheesy lasagna and savory stroganoff, that are packaged for freshness in individual metal Mylar pouches and carry a 25-year shelf life. Visit wisefoodstorage.com today to request a free entree sample. And for a limited time, enter the promo code Lewis to get no-cost shipping on any order. That's wisefoodstorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE. That's 855-366-3947 and enter promo code Lewis for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Peace of mind, the greatest gift you can give to the ones you love.
Ready to save while getting prepared? Then you're ready for the winter sale at 21stCenturyGoods.com. Take advantage of the incredible savings on all items at 21stCenturyGoods.com. Portable AM, FM, and shortwave radios from $19.95. American Red Cross emergency radios and Kato radios from $28.95. Solar lanterns from $22.95. Solar flashlights, two for $16.95. Hand crank LED hurricane lanterns and flashlights from $8.95. Be sure to check out the flexible solar panel to power your emergency and survival gear. Every order over $75 will receive a solar-powered flashlight absolutely free. So get prepared this winter by visiting 21stCenturyGoods.com. Spelled the number 2, the number 1, ST, CenturyGoods.com. 21stCenturyGoods.com or call 866-999-8422. That's 866-999-8422. 21stCenturyGoods.com. Power up your survival.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
This is Jim Mosley, editor of Saucer Smear, and I'm here to say a good word or two about the Paracast, which I believe is the gold standard of paranormal radio. Listen to it if you can.
With Gene, with Chris, the Paracast is here, and we continue with Ray Stanford telling us about setting up this laser test and trying to, I guess, communicate with ET, right?
Well, yes, that was the piggyback on the experiment of light bend. Now, the idea with the light bend was the television was pointed directly the same way as the laser. But if we should be filming a UFO up there in the sky that we have it, if we move the laser and the telescope and the video camera pointing, as we move it nearer to the object, if suddenly it should be reflected off the object when it's not actually pointing at it, then we would have evidence of light bend, and we could also easily calculate the angle and some of the parameters that's affected with whatever force or field effect has caused this. We got that idea from the famous 16-millimeter movie that was taken in Ohio back in 1949, when a certain church was having a carnival, and they had the big spotlight, carbon arc spotlight beam, and a UFO came and was playing around up there, and they decided to try to hit the object with the spotlight beam. What is interesting is that I have a copy of one of the film frames in which you see the big old beam, because the light scattered, there was quite a bit of motion in the air that night. You see the beam go up, and it's missing the UFO by, I would guess, maybe 7 degrees or so, at least 5 degrees. But all of a sudden, when it gets within a certain radius of the so-called UFO, it sharply bends and hits the UFO and reflects off of it. So it strongly suggests, and there you have probably the first instrumented evidence a UFO effect bending light. And that's why we used the laser system in the bend experiment, but we wanted the piggyback capability of seeing if we could possibly communicate with them, which would have been well worthwhile, but it proved futile. Eventually, as we got the sophisticated equipment, the recording gravimeter, recording magnetometer, we quit using the light circle that we had there that was electronically sequenced because it was creating a magnetic noise that was being picked up by the magnetometer, and we certainly don't want to introduce noise into any system where we're recording important physical parameters of UFO operation.
Let me ask you a question here. When you got this inverse feedback or whatever to your transmissions, did the UFO do any physical change in maneuvering or
yes.
just...
Yes, no, sense? It stopped. It stopped overhead temporarily and did this, and then it moved on, stopped again, and then moved on to the northwest, if I remember correctly. But it looked to be very high up. It was as pure white as you could possibly see. It was a very intense light that was being emitted from it. It wasn't anything like the relatively low intensity of satellite. And of course, it wasn't on a satellite course. But it was enough to convince us that it was truly anomalous. And when it stopped and did this, and we looked at what it had done, it appeared to be the inverse of pi.
Now, explain to our listeners, and we really don't have mathematicians here, and I'll tell you that quite frankly. We know what pi is. You know, it's kind of like an endless number that goes on.
Right.
An inverse of pi, what does that mean in the real world in plain English?
We don't know what it actually means. The thing
so
is,
why do you
pi
conclude it's the inverse of pi and that's related to pi?
Well, I don't ask me. We didn't ask them to transmit that. We don't know that it's what it was, but that's what it looked like. That's what the way it was interpreted. Now, often it seemed like in some of the UFO related experiences that people have, it's almost as if there is a form of what would be called lateral communication. If there was a communicational content there, then we have to look and try to say. Now, pi, of course, for those that have forgotten their geometry, it's the ratio of the diameter to the circumference of a circle, 3.14, and own numbers just keep on going, it seems, to infinity. And that in itself is rather unique. And the inverse of it, I'm not sure. I mean, there's not enough solid evidence. For example, we didn't have the equipment we had later where we would have recorded this whole thing. And since it's not solid enough, if we were solid enough, we would probably do a lot of work and try to publish something explaining what that might mean. But since we can't prove it, we prefer to focus upon the data that we did get recorded with good optical and electronic instruments and leave that to, let's say, tickle our curiosity.
Let me ask you a question here. You had this one instance where you fired the laser beam at the UFO. It seemed to respond and hover overhead. Did you repeat it to see if it would happen with other sightings?
One where it stopped and hovered overhead and did the inverse pi, there was no laser. We simply had a light circle 100 feet in diameter. That was a Pike Creek outside of Pike Creek.
Okay, so you've clarified. Okay. But I'm saying here with these tests, with lasers, with all these light circles and stuff, this happened a number of years ago. Did you try to repeat those experiments since then?
No, we haven't tried to repeat them. We decided that that approach was somewhat naive, and the best approach was the direct approach, simply to not let them know you're there and try to get the data with the instruments. That may be a little naive, too, because...
Okay, but you say naive. In what sense? I mean, is there a side effect that you're not telling us, something negative?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I didn't understand what you were asking about.
Okay, well, you said that your efforts to, I guess, communicate... or communicate
yep.
information or send signals to the UFOs,
right.
These were naive. In what sense were they naive?
Because, one, it's like, let me give an analogy to the contact cult on the island that was depicted in that movie, Mundo Cane, or wherever it was. We in effect, were the contact cultists. I mean, they go in their way. They're doing whatever they want to. They may notice you and stop or something. But the contact people, cultists on the island, could not have expected the aircraft flying over to Guam or wherever they were going to stop and entertain them by responding to their signals. And likewise, it seems to me that we were naive. UFOs have responded to signals when they were in close range and persons have flashed flashlights at them. Oh, they did that to me one time. This is, in fact, one of the few cases that, out of the many that's listed as truly unidentified
yeah,
in the
It happens all the time with Stephen Greer, too. Boy, so many people are just, they have those flashlights clicking in those crop circle
towns.
They're
claiming they made contact and so on. I mean, what I'm saying is we do not do that anymore because we think it is naive, and we would certainly not charge people, as Stephen Greer did, to teach them to contact. We do not believe that you can contact UFOs with flashlights.
So you didn't have an ambassador training to the universe, ambassador to the universe trainings?
We didn't have that. No, we're poor people. We couldn't afford that. He charged too much.
Well, maybe, of course, if you charge enough, you get enough people, you can make a lot of money from it. Think of all the business you didn't generate here.
Right. He may make some money, but we're not going to
make. And then we could have everybody like they do at CSETI. They can all surround you and lay their hands on you and let you be the medium, the channel.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they do that, but that's even more exciting. Jeez. That's real interesting. But, we began to get more success when we changed our approach to just simply the passive instrument monitoring. We did have some one night. Well, that's another story. I don't know if we want to get into that now, Chris.
You know something, Ray? You've kind of opened the door there. You've pulled the genie out of the bottle. You got more success with other attempts. Okay,
right.
Maybe tell us something. Throw us a bone here.
Okay. Well, let's see. I was going to mention the. One night, this was in the beginning. It was before we had either of our lab buildings set up, and we were in the process of building the light circle. And we had a group of people out at our lab site with cameras, and some of the guys had tripods and so on. And I tried to teach the people not to waste our film on mistaking conventional objects as aircraft, but they continued to do this, and man, they would be clicking away at something that was nothing but an aircraft with a xenon strobe on it. And so I made a rule. I said, you're not to click any photographs without first clearing it with me. I'll let you know if it's something you should take a picture of. Well, as it happened, a few days after that rule was put down, I had jumped back into my car to get my jacket. It was getting cool, and I began to hear everybody gathered around there saying, Ray, can we take a picture? Can we take a picture? And I jumped out of the car and I said, why aren't you fools taking pictures? We're going to take simultaneously so we can have triangulation. A textbook so-called dome disc was coming down.
Now, the textbook dome disc that was coming down,
right,
we have to hold off.
The book on UFOs, that's what
Ray,
you
we have to get into that in a moment. We have Ray Stanford with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products. But increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water. And because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combined Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit Big Berkey waterfilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's Big Berkey waterfilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
If you constantly feel run down and tired, your pH level might be low and your body could be full of toxins. If what you drink is not at a pH level of 8 or higher, you are inviting bacteria and acid to thrive in your body. But there is something you can do. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision plasma pH drops to your water to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise your pH balance to optimum levels. AlkaVision plasma pH drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals in the world, alkalizing the water you drink, ridding your body of acidic waste and toxins, and helping you regain energy and vibrant health. And studies show viruses, bacteria, and toxins cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision plasma pH drops at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
With Gene, with Chris, with Ray Stanford, about the dome disc coming down towards him. Tell me more.
Yeah. It was not coming with his bottom straight, the axis straight down. It was tilted where you could see the dome, the red glowing dome on top, and you could see the whole flange of the thing coming right on down. And I said, okay, on 0, 5, I want to, in other words, everybody get a picture at the same time so we could triangulate while he was still at one given position. And 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm about to say click, and it turns down like he's hearing me with the rheostat and vanishes. Well, much to our surprise, within 2, maximum 3.5 minutes, I believe, 2 F4 Phantoms, now this is at night, came right over the middle of our light circle. Actually, we did have the light circle up, but that was all we had up at that time. We didn't have the buildings, as I said. They came right over the middle of it within 50 feet, which no one in a conventional aircraft would. They, as they told us later, were using infrared scanners, knew exactly where they were related to the nearby hills. The two of them passed over. A few minutes later, an Air Force prop plane passed over. Well, it wasn't until some months later that our office got calls from intelligence at Bergstrom Air Force Base, which had sent out the Air Force to start with. The first one was from the head of intelligence, and I wasn't there, but the front secretary out front answered, and he said that they just wondered if they'd like them to vector reports of UFOs from the public to us. And she said, yes, that's nice. You thanks for preaching. Well, there's nothing unusual about that. The Air Force was willing to do that because they were at that point actually using instruments that started that in May of 52, and they had much further along in understanding the objects and their phenomena, apparently, than the public could ever provide them. So they passed them on to us, and we said, fine. But the next day, I got a call from another person in intelligence, and we verified this, and I will eventually publish his name and rank. rank and all the details. He got a call and he wanted to talk to me. He got me. The first place he asked if, he said that intelligence out there had about, I think it was a dozen or maybe a baker's dozen people in intelligence there wanted to come and take a tour of our lab site. And could I accommodate this? Would we allow them to do so? And I said, well, you know, I'm just the head of the project. I'm not the president of the board of directors. And I'll have to talk this over with everybody involved and see. And it's a surprise that you would want. And to come out, being Air Force and Air Force intelligence, then he began to state that they he told me, he said, you remember the night when you had that object come right down over you and then a few minutes later two Air Force came over your light circle? And I said, yes sir, I remember very well. You want to explain that to me? And he said, yes. He said, we were tracking that disc. He said, and we knew because we had reconnoitered your site before, and we knew it was coming down directly over your site when it got very near the ground, as you know, a few hundred feet up, but at almost where it was about to go out of the range of our, because of the hills and the terrain of our radar. And he said, all of a sudden, it vanished. And we did not know whether it had gone up or down. But if it had gone down, we wanted to get out there. And we wanted to see if it was on the ground. And if so, other action would be taken. He said, so that's why we flew over. We knew exactly where your light circle was because we had scanned it before, and we went right there right away. We didn't have to search for anything, and it wasn't on the ground, much to our relief. But he then made a proposal, and I believe that, and interrupt me if we need a break, I don't believe that such a proposal was ever made to any other UFO group or individual in the country or the world by the United States Air Force. What they offered, they gave me the command post phone number to dial if I saw an object that I recognized as an anomalous aerial object. And they said that they knew that I was experienced enough that I would not mistake a prosaic object for it. They stated that at any time that I called that telephone number, and I have a tape recording of the entire conversation I'm describing, they would vector two F4 Phantoms with IR infrared scanning equipment to wherever I told them I was. They said, you know, particularly we know where you're on the side, otherwise you're going to have to tell us. And but they said, we have confidence in you and your organization, and we will scramble the jets. Now, if you think about what it costs to scramble two F4s, they must have taken us pretty seriously. So if the Air Force or the government pretends that they don't take this subject pretty seriously, they better explain why they trusted Ray Stanford enough to vector two F4s at his suggestion by telephone. Now, I checked, I called the number and verified that it was exactly what I had been given. It was not a trick. I could even hear the jets in the background and lingo going on. But clearly, it was the command post. So this was not a telephone trick. And also, we verified the officer's identity.
Parenthetically, with a government that can spend $700 on a toilet seat, what does it cost them to scramble jets? $50,000, $100,000, what?
I don't know that, well, it might be more than that now with the cost of fuel, but I don't know what it was back then. But if you talk to anybody about that, they'll tell you that that was really quite a commitment that they would do that at that time. It indicates how seriously they took the need to gain data on these objects. Now, they knew me from the first time that the Bergstrom Intelligence knew me was when I had the sighting that I said was unidentified officially in the files from the night of June 24th, 1967. Was it 67? And I was out at the Mansfield Dam west of Austin. And that was the case. It was before we had our project up. But I had mainly called Bergstrom Intelligence on a lark simply because I wanted to know how seriously they would take my report. Were they really bothered to take down a bunch of information, or would they say, go call a TV station or some UFO group? But they didn't. They took it seriously, but without telling me, the next day I was just getting ready to walk out the door to go to dinner there in Austin. A knock came at the door, and it was an officer from intelligence, and I have his name and so on and so forth. That would eventually be all over the record. He took detailed accounts from me and told me himself some very interesting things that I won't go into unless Chris wants to, who knows the story.
Ray, I'd like to know about it. This intelligence officer.
Right.
Now, let's get the dates back clarified here, because we have a lot of events – that have moved from one to the other, and I want to really kind of focus strictly on some of these details. When did this happen? What year again?
This was in 1967.
Okay, so we're talking quite a long time ago.
Yes.
We're talking at a time the Beatles were still together. We had the summer in San Francisco.
Before the Beatles.
No, the Beatles were in the early '60s.
'62.
Yeah.
But before the end of Blue Book.
No, we're not at the end of it. We're just right near the end of it. It was one of their last...
Before the end of Blue Book was 2 years later.
Right, that's right.
Okay, so we're in 1967.
Right.
This intelligence officer tells you a few things.
Yeah.
What did he tell you?
Well, I'm going to have to... The reason I didn't want to go in that unless you asked for it, because I have to tell first what I told him. So I went out there merely... it was me and my big 200-pound St. Bernard dog, Big Benedictus, and my little Volkswagen Buck.
And if I was an intelligence officer, I'd be looking out at that dog.
Yeah, right. Definitely. The worst danger from that dog was a slobber. And it was summer in Austin. But anyway, I decided the beginning, I'd go out near the dam there. You know, there had been the reports in the 60s, a lot of UFOs over Lake Wanick and association with water. And so I thought, well, I'll just drive out of the dam. It's dark out there. It wasn't built up like it is now. And so I was driving out there, and I'm a fast driver, but there was a car in front of me that, since it was curving roads out in the hill country, I kind of hesitated to pass. There was a little red convertible Austin Healey in front of me, and looked like from the what I could see from the light, the car's coming the other way, that so there was two people in it. But they obligingly pulled over onto the shoulder and let me pass. And I didn't honk at them, didn't flash my lights, but they let me pass.
They were not New York drivers, obviously.
I didn't catch what you said, but I'll go on. The dog and I went on up and parked right by the Mansfield Dam. There's a area you could drive and park there. After I had been there a while, here comes the guys in the Austin Healey. And they pull in right in front of me and pull around and further up, and they pull up almost into the trees because where they would put their car up on a slope. And they started flashing their lights into the sky, their headlights, the car. I had a big spotlight with me. But they started flashing the lights in the sky, and then they cut them off. I thought, wait a minute. Are these guys out here for the same purpose I am? But after a short while, a blue cigar-shaped object, kind of a little deeper than electrical blue, to my memory now, came across, and it wasn't moving on its axis. It was moving as these things do. They move on a tilt in relationship to the direction of travel.
We'll look into this object and the ramifications back in 1967 in a moment. With Ray Stanford, with Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.